ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सो टुडे वी आर डीलिंग विथ टेक्स्ट नंबर 26 ऑफ चैप्टर 9 ऑफ भगवद गीता। Kindly repeat after me.
Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhaktya prayachati tad aham bhakti upaharitam ashname prayatatmanah पत्रं पुष्पं फलं तोयम् यो मे भक्त्या प्रयच्छति तदहं भक्त्युपहृतम् अश्नामि प्रयतात्मनः। पत्रं पुष्पं फलं तोयम् यो मे भक्त्या प्रयच्छति तदहं भक्त्युपहृतम् अश्नामि प्रयतात्मनः। पत्रम्
अ लीफ, पुष्पम् अ फ्लावर, फलम् अ फ्रूट, तोयम वाटर, यह हुएवर मे अंटू मी भक्त्या विथ डिवोशन प्रयच्छति ऑफर्स तत् दैट अहम आय भक्ति उपहृतम offered in devotion, ashnami accept, prayata atmanah of one in pure consciousness. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I will accept it. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. I will read, quote, here Lord Krishna, having established that He is the only enjoyer, the primeval Lord, and the real object of all sacrificial offerings, reveals what types of sacrifices He desires to be offered. If one wishes to engage in devotional service to the Supreme in order to be purified and to reach the goal of life, the transcendental loving service of God, then he should find out what the Lord desires of him. One who loves Krishna will give him whatever he wants, and he avoids offering anything which is undesirable or unasked for. Thus, meat, fish and eggs should not be offered to Krishna. If he desired such things as offerings, he would have said so. Instead, he clearly requests that a leaf, fruit, flowers and water be given to him, and he says of this offering, I will accept it. Therefore, we should understand that he will not accept meat, fish and eggs. Vegetables, grains, fruits, milk and water are the proper foods for human beings and are prescribed by Lord Krishna himself. Whatever else we eat cannot be offered to him, since he will not accept it. Thus we cannot be acting on the level of loving devotion if we offer such foods. In the third chapter, verse 13, Lord Krishna explains that only the remains of sacrifice are purified and fit for consumption. by those who are seeking advancement in life and release from the clutches of the material entanglement. Those who do not make an offering of their food, he says in the same verse, are said to be eating only sin. In other words, there every mouthful is simply deepening their involvement in the complexities of material nature. But preparing nice simple vegetable dishes, offering them before the picture or deity of Lord Krishna, and bowing down and praying for him to accept such a humble offering, enable one to advance steadily in life, to purify the body, and to create fine brain tissues which will lead to clear thinking. Above all, the offering should be made with an attitude of love. Krishna has no need of food, since he already possesses everything that be. Yet he will accept the offering of one who desires to please him in that way. The important element in preparation, in serving, and in offering is to act with love for Krishna. The impersonalist philosophers who wish to maintain that the absolute truth is without senses cannot comprehend this verse of Bhagavad Gita. To them it is either a metaphor or proof of the mundane character of Krishna, the speaker of the Gita. But in actuality, Krishna, the Supreme Godhead, has senses, and it is stated that his senses are interchangeable. In other words, one sense can perform the function of any other. This is what it means to say that Krishna is absolute. Lacking senses, he could hardly be considered full in all opulences. In the 7th chapter, Krishna has explained that he impregnates the living entities into material nature. This is done by his looking upon material nature. And so, in this instance, Krishna's hearing the devotee's words of love in offering foodstuffs is wholly identical with his eating and actually tasting. This point should be emphasized. Because of his absolute position, his hearing is wholly identical with his eating and tasting. Only the devotee who accepts Krishna as he describes himself without interpretation can understand the Supreme Absolute Truth, can eat food and enjoy it.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So in this shloka, Lord Krishna is telling us how to execute Krishna consciousness. What is the meaning of Krishna consciousness? Krishna consciousness means to understand that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord, that I am the spirit soul who is eternal part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and therefore my only function in life is to serve him with love and devotion. And then to act upon this understanding. When we work in this consciousness, this is called Krishna consciousness. This is the sum and substance of the whole philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita. So here Lord Krishna is saying that one who offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, etc. with devotion, I will accept. The Jivatma or the spirit soul is connected to Krishna in a bond. That bond or connection is a connection of love, bhakti. We have forgotten that bond. We are lost in this material world. And we are seeking that love in so many different ways. But that love is not finding its fulfillment because we are not reposing that love in the proper person, the Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna himself. So that connection between us and Krishna is to be established by the process of love. Love means to offer something, to give something, to sacrifice something. Love has no meaning without all these things. Even in mundane relationships between ordinary people, we see love is expressed in various ways. Love may be expressed by giving a gift or receiving it. Love may be expressed by offering some food or receiving it.
Love may be exchanged by offering confidences. That is, you reveal your mind. You exchange your own thoughts. So in so many ways, love is exchanged in this material world between different people. Similarly, Lord Krishna is also a person. And therefore, we have to exchange love with him, but through the medium of offering. So very simple way is given here, that you simply offer a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or some water, and I will accept. Lord Krishna does not demand much in that sense. He is saying, whatever little you have, you can give me. Sometimes, some people ask, what is the need for Lord Krishna to ask in this way? Does he need something? Why does he have to ask us? The fact is that God doesn't need anything from us. We are in need of giving God something. Everything actually belongs to the Supreme Lord. He is the supreme proprietor of everything. That is one meaning of God. God means that he owns everything. Nothing actually belongs to us. Everything belongs to God. Isha vasyam idam sarvam yat kincham jagatyam jagat. And therefore, we have to accept whatever is meant as our quota for our subsistence. Bhunjate te tvagham papa. We have to accept whatever little he has given us according to our quota. And when we accept it in this consciousness, then that is considered bona fide. It is sacrifice. But when we try to usurp the property of God, then that is called sin. So Lord Krishna does not want anything because he is full in himself. He is complete and satisfied within himself. After all, everything is his property. So he does not want to take away what he has given us for our subsistence. He has no need for it. But yet, he says, I will accept. Because there is love and devotion. He says, Ashnami. Ashnami means, I will accept it if you give me. Although it's my own thing. It's my own property. But I will receive it, I will accept it, because you are offering with love and devotion. Bhakti upahritam. So the key element is that we are offering to Lord Krishna what belongs to him with love and devotion. And that is what pleases the Lord. Srila Prabhupada gives an example that if there is a small boy who actually, when he's eating something, he gives it to his father and he says, this is very nice, you please taste it. So the father is very happy. He says, oh really, it is nice? Let me see what it's like. He also tastes it and then he also enjoys it. So that is love. Actually, the father has provided the food to the child. He has paid for it. He is looking after the child. He is maintaining the child in every way. And yet, the child offers him and says, now you take it. It's very nice. Just take it and enjoy it. And the father is very happy when the child, he comes forward in this way. Similarly, although everything belongs to Lord Krishna, still whatever we have as our own quota, when we offer it back to Lord Krishna, and say, please taste it. Please enjoy it. It's very nice. Then Lord Krishna is very pleased. This is called love. So the need is not from the point of view of Lord Krishna. The need is from our point of view. We need to offer to Lord Krishna what belongs to him. You may have seen when you go to some holy places that there are people who stand in the Ganges, in Mother Ganges, and then they offer the water of the Ganges back into the Ganges. That is the process for worshipping Mother Ganga. What do? You stand waist deep in the water. You take the water in the palms of your hands, cup them, and then you offer it back to Mother Ganges, requesting her, kindly accept this offering. So what are you taking as an offering? You're taking the water from Mother Ganges, and you're offering that very same water back to her, and you're saying, please accept it. And that is considered to be proper worship of Mother Ganges. Similarly, everything is belonging to Lord Krishna. But we take everything that belongs to Krishna, whatever is available within our quota, and we offer it back to Lord Krishna, please accept it. And Lord Krishna accepts. This is what he's talking about. This is love. This is bhakti. So when we learn to sacrifice, we are at least acknowledging that Lord Krishna is our provider. That is the beginning. It is not like a business relationship that you are giving me something, therefore I am giving you back something. But at least that is a beginning, that we acknowledge that nothing belongs to me. I have got the crops and the food from various sources. Nature is providing the soil, nature is providing the air, the light, the water, the sunshine. Everything is provided by nature. Nature is coming from God. The body that I have got, that is also provided by God. My very soul is a part and parcel of God. Everything belongs to God. Therefore, I must offer everything to God. So in this way, we develop at least a sense of acknowledgement, of gratitude, that yes, Lord Krishna has given me so much, now I must offer it to Him before I accept it. Therefore, it is said we should offer not only just a fruit or leaf or flower, but we should offer Him anything before we use it. We should offer your clothes. You should offer any new machine you buy in your house. You should offer Him your own house. You should offer Him your watch when you buy it, a new pen. You should offer Him, of course, all these things, flowers and all that. And so much so that in the Puranas it is said that you should also offer Him medicines before you take it. So nothing should be taken without offering to Krishna. But Srila Prabhupada mentions here that you cannot take forbidden items and then say, I have offered to Lord Krishna, so therefore now it is all right. So some people, they say, yes, in the name of offering to Lord Krishna, they use it for their own sense enjoyment. Some people, they use very, very opulent clothing. They use all kinds of different artificial deodorants and very heavy perfumes. They may use for themselves so many nice, nice facilities. And then justified by saying, after all, I have offered it to Lord Krishna. So that is good if you offer it to Lord Krishna. But at the same time, if you want to progress in spiritual life, simultaneously there is also the concept of poverty for oneself. There is the concept of opulence for Krishna. For Krishna, when you are offering to God, you give Him the very best. Just like in traditional Indian families, when the daughter is married and the son-in-law is coming in the house, he is considered a very special guest. So he is given something very opulent. He is given the best treatment in the house when he comes. He is a special guest. So you give him the best possible treatment. So when to an ordinary person, a mere mortal, you're giving such a VIP treatment. So when you're offering things to God, should you not make sure that you give the very best? So you give the very best to God, but for yourself, you have to use just the bare essentials. So the principle is opulence for the Lord, poverty for myself. So then there is no question of cheating. So I'm using everything, all these nice clothes, all these nice things, actually I'm offered to Krishna, then I'm using for myself. These things should be offered to Krishna for His service. And then we can distribute as prasad. Prasad means mercy. When the Lord accepts our offering, then it is called prasad or remnants. The remnants are called His mercy. Prasad means mercy. So in this way, we are trained to see that actually Lord Krishna deserves more and more. And we should try to subsist on less and less. So the more you offer to Lord Krishna, actually, the more you understand how much less I need for myself. So in this way, we slowly, slowly become trained to understand the spirit of devotion. Another cheating idea may be that Lord Krishna is asking only for a leaf, fruit or flower. So even if I have crores of rupees, I'll offer Him only a leaf, fruit and flower and I'll get away with it. But actually, Lord Krishna, what is He saying here? He's trying to say that no material impediment exists in your trying to offering things to Me. Even if you're very poor, someone may say, I'm so poor, that what can I offer to Krishna? I have no money, I have no this, I have no that. So Lord Krishna says, doesn't matter. Can't you just offer Me a leaf? Can't you offer Me just pluck a flower from a tree and offer it to Me? Can't you offer Me a glass of water? Is there anyone so poor in this world who can't even offer a leaf or a flower? So just in case somebody makes the excuse that I can't afford it, Lord Krishna says, okay, don't give Me opulent things. Give Me whatever you can according to your means. But if you have crores, then you must also give Me according to those means. It shouldn't be that you offer Krishna some two-day-old chapati, and little bit of dry sabji, and then you eat a nice feast of wonderful rasgullas and pulao and everything, thinking Lord Krishna only wants leaf, fruit, flower, that's all. Give Krishna the very best that you can afford. That is the principle. Give him till it pinches you. That is the idea. And then we begin to realize, yes, actually Krishna is reciprocating with us. So this is the principle of bhakti, reciprocation, offering to Krishna, sacrificing for the sake of the beloved. So the more we do this, although we do not understand, we may not have a proper conception of God. We may not really have the realization of God. But by actually beginning the process of offering, automatically God will begin to manifest in our life, slowly and slowly and slowly. So offering to Krishna is the most potent way of realizing the hand of God in our own life, of realizing how to love Krishna. Now you may ask, when there is love between two people in this world, I can see that person in front of me. So I can serve him, I can offer things to that person. But God, where is God? How do I know where he is? How can I offer things to God? So God says, don't worry. In every age, Lord Krishna descends in this material world as an avatar. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuthanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. He says, whenever there is a decline of religious principles, whenever there is a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend. And then what does he do? Dharma sansthapanarthaya sambhavame yuga yuga. To re-establish the principles of religion, I descend. So Lord Krishna has coming himself, as he did 5,000 years ago, and also as he did 500 years ago as Lord Chaitanya. And sometimes he descends as Lord Ram, sometimes he comes as Lord Narsingadev, sometimes as Lord Varahadev, in so many different avatars. But now they are not here in front of us. So Lord Krishna takes two very special avatars just for the sake of receiving our service. What are those two avatars? Can anyone say? What are those two avatars that Lord Krishna takes for the specific purpose of accepting our offerings and accepting our seva? Yes? Holy name is one. Very good. Excellent. The holy name of God is the very avatar of Krishna. It is not different from Krishna. And the second? No, yes? Archa Vigraha. Very good. The deity, the murti of Krishna, of God himself. He specifically incarnates in the form of the murti and the holy name to actually enable us to serve him. So Lord Krishna says, you cannot see me because you have forgotten me for so many millions of lifetimes. You can't understand. So therefore, here I am. I am coming before you in the form of the holy name which you can chant, you can hear, you can remember, and you can serve me in that way. And when I come before you in the form of the Archa Vigraha or the Murti or the deity, then also you can see me in front of you and you can serve me. So therefore, we are supposed to offer these things to the deity of Krishna, to the picture of Krishna. We should not think that the deity is just a statue, an ordinary idol. It is not an ordinary idol or statue. What is the difference between an idol and a deity? To a person who is not trained in spiritual subjects, in the art of devotion, he thinks an idol or the deity is just any other statue, any other idol. But idol means any form that you concoct according to your own concoction, according to your own imagination. Or if you just create some statue of some ordinary man, that is called an idol or a statue. But deity means only the form of the Supreme Lord. But the form has to be made according to the directions given in the scriptures. You and I simply cannot sit down and try to imagine what does God look like and then just make some statue. You have to say it according to the instructions given in the scriptures. In every scripture, especially in the Vaishnava Dharma, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Bhagavad Gita, the Puranas, there are so many wonderful descriptions of Lord Krishna by which you can actually understand what he looks like. You know what his complexion is like. You know what his hair is like. You know what his eyes are like. You know how tall he is. You know how his hands are. You know what clothes he wears. You know what kind of turban he wears. You know what kind of jewelry he wears. You know what kind of garland he wears. Everything is given in the scripture. Moreover, the pure devotees of the Lord are always seeing Lord Krishna personally within their hearts. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santaha sadaivaridayeshu vilokayanti yam shyam sundaram achinti guna swarupam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajame. When one's eyes are smeared with the pulp of devotion, then one is able to see within one's heart the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna or Shyam Sundar 24 hours a day. And he's actually seeing the Lord. Just like you and I are seeing the deity form when the darshan is open, so also the pure devotee of the Lord, he's seeing him directly within his own heart because he has pure devotion. So therefore the self-realized souls, the pure devotees of the Lord, according to their realization, they can also guide us. What does Lord Krishna look like? How should you make the deity? Once when Srila Prabhupada went to the West in the early days of the Hare Krishna movement, at that time, one very young devotee, she was a painter, and Srila Prabhupada commissioned her to make a painting of Lord Krishna, lifting Govardhan Hill, like in this picture, something like that. So, she made a picture, but she used her own imagination. She thought Govardhan Hill is so big, it's a hill, and Lord Krishna, after all, he was just a small boy at that time. He was only 8 years old. So therefore, he must have had very big muscles. So therefore, she drew Krishna as a very muscular person. So when Srila Prabhupada saw that, he said, no, Krishna doesn't look like this. Krishna has very proportionate arms. And then he specified what should be that proportion. So in this way, we can see that the form of the Lord as in the deity is not a concocted imaginary form. It is directly the Supreme Lord Himself. At the time of the installation of the deity, the pure devotee of the Lord, he prays to the Lord, please come and enter into the deity form. Please manifest yourself as the deity. And be kind to us and accept our service in this way. So Lord Krishna agrees. He responds to the call of his devotee and he manifests himself in the deity form so that we can serve him. Otherwise, we have no other way of serving him. Otherwise, who are you going to offer this flower to? Who are you going to offer the leaf, the flower, the water, the food? Whom are you going to offer it to? Somebody. And you post it in the authorized post box that belongs to the postal department. You are sure that the letter will reach that person. But if you post your letter in any box that is lying on the street, or you post your letter in some imitation post box, and the letter will not reach. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada says that the deity is the authorized representation of the Supreme Lord in the form of the Archa Vigraha. And when you post your letter, that is when you serve him and you offer your prayers to him and you offer your worship to him, it is accepted by him directly. But if you worship any idol or any statue which has no connection with the scripture, which has no connection with the pure devotees of the Lord, then that doesn't reach Krishna. It is not authorized. In this way we should know that the deity worship is not simply some sentimental process. It is an authorized process. And Krishna is saying here, Ashnami, I will eat it. Sometimes people say, how do you know Krishna eats? How can Krishna eat? Simple answer, if you and I are eating, and we are such insignificant creatures, can't Krishna, who is the Supreme Lord, also eat? And moreover, he's saying here, Ashnami, I am accepting it, whatever you give me, I will eat. Not that he's hungry, but he eats it, why? Bhakti uparitam, because you offer with devotion. So he is hungry for the devotion. He doesn't want our opulent foodstuffs. You know the story of Sudama. Sudama took him just some simple foodstuffs, some chipped rice, but Lord Krishna was so happy. And yet, when Lord Krishna was offered the very opulent things in the house of Duryodhana, he didn't take it. So therefore, Lord Krishna is seeking the devotion. This is the importance of deity worship. Sometimes some people say, well, how do we understand that Lord Krishna is in the deity? Actually, God is everywhere. So why should we go to the temple? Why should we worship the deity and serve him and offer him all these things?
Can anyone give any argument against that? Yes? Correct? If he's everywhere, then isn't the deity a part of that everywhere? Isn't the temple a part of that everywhere? So he's also in the temple. He's also in the deity. But still, there is a special difference between the deity and any other place where he's present. Like he's present in every atom. But at the same time, when he's present in the deity form, he's actually accepting your offerings. People who make these objections, they cannot understand the absolute nature of God. Brahmaji describes, Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti pashyanti panti kalayanti charam jaganti. He says, the Lord Krishna is absolute. Absolute means that he can do any action of one sense with any of his other senses. For example, if you have to see, you can only see with the eyes. If you have to taste, you can only taste with the tongue. If you have to hear, you can only hear with the ears. But Lord Krishna, he can eat with his eyes. He sees the offering you give him, and he can eat with that. You offer him, my Lord, please accept this, and by hearing your prayer, automatically he has eaten it. Because he is absolute. With his eyes, he creates the whole material world. With his ears, he can walk. With his tongue, he can do anything else. That's the meaning of God. He is absolute. Therefore, the deity form is actually the Supreme Lord who is accepting our service. So in this Kali Yuga, deity worship is very important. Now somebody may ask that the Yuga Dharma in this age is chanting the holy name. It is said that there is no other way apart from chanting the holy name in this age. So why should we worship the deity? Can anyone answer? What is the need? We should simply chant the holy name.
Yes. That is also one important reason, that you actually have the concrete form of the Lord in front of you, whom you can actually perceive and see, and you can understand that He is present. But actually, yes, physically also to accept your service, as it was pointed out just now, that because He is there personally in form, personally in front of you, so you can offer. But the reason specifically deity worship is recommended is that it helps us to become purified. We are not on the stage where we can chant the holy name 24 hours a day. So the process of deity worship is specially recommended for conditioned souls in this Kali Yuga, because it helps us to become pure and clean from within. Because in deity worship we have to lead a very regulated life. We have to offer according to very strict rules and regulations. And by performing and worshipping the deity, we get purified. So by offering to Krishna, we benefit. So it is in our interest, because our heart gets purified. That is the importance of deity worship. So in this way we see Lord Krishna has made all arrangements. So when we say that the Lord has taken the form of, taken the avatar of the deity, we should not think, as many people think, that Lord Krishna or the Supreme Lord is actually impersonal, and that He has come in the form of this murti just to accept the worship. Lord Krishna has come in the murti form to accept our worship, but He also remains primarily a person. He has a form. Even as a Supreme Lord, He has a form. It is not that He is formless and now He accepts a form. Many people cannot come to terms with this fact. They cannot understand how God can have a form. The simple answer is, if you and I can have a form, can God not have a form? But usually the problem comes because we are conditioned by our experience and our observation. We think that because our form is limited, therefore, if God has a form, then He also must be limited. But actually, our form is material, and the form of God is spiritual. Satchitananda Vigraha. To have a spiritual form means that it is unlimited. And Lord Krishna in His own spiritual Satchitananda Vigraha can expand Himself unlimitedly. So He has a form, and at the same time that form is unlimited. So in that deity form we see Krishna directly as He is in the spiritual world. We should not think that Krishna looks anything different from what he appears like in the deity form. About half an hour from now, when we will be taking darshan, we will see Lord Gopinath here. We should have faith that Lord Krishna and his abode in the spiritual world is looking exactly like that. There is no difference. He has manifested himself out of his mercy for our sake, for our welfare. So it is not that he has an impersonal form and then he manifests himself simply for the sake of becoming concrete to our vision. Becoming concrete to our vision is one reason. But it doesn't mean that he is formless in the ultimate analysis. This point is very important. So in this way, the holy name and deity worship must go on side by side. That is why in the process of deity worship, all the mantras usually revolve around the holy name. We have to chant so many different mantras while you're offering food, when you're putting the deity to rest, when you're waking up the deity, and when you're performing arati. So many mantras have to be chanted. And all these mantras all revolve around the holy name. So the essence of deity worship is also the holy name. In fact, the essence of all seva to the Lord is the holy name. Every time you're doing seva also, you should be thinking about the holy name. You should be chanting the holy name all the time. Because we cannot chant the name 24 hours a day. So by doing this seva, our heart gets purified. And when it gets purified, we are able to get more and more attracted to the holy name. And then we are able to chant more purely. We are able to chant more often. We are able to think of Krishna more purely. So chanting the holy name and deity worship must go on forever. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ye yatha mam prapadyante tam sthaiva bhajami ham. He says, as you approach me, I will reward you accordingly. So if you think that this deity is simply a statue, he will reciprocate with you as a statue. He will simply appear before you as a block of stone, a block of marble. If you approach him with great faith and devotion, with the understanding that he is the Supreme Lord himself, he is personally Krishna present here, then he will also relate to you as the Supreme Lord, as Krishna himself. It's all a matter of faith. Without faith, you cannot achieve God. There is no question of God realization. Just like if you want to reach a particular destination and you want to buy an aeroplane ticket, you have to have faith that that aeroplane is going to reach that destination. When you go to purchase a ticket, you cannot keep asking that the counter clerk, is the plane going to reach Delhi definitely? Are you sure it's not going to crash on the way? Are you sure there's not going to be a hijack? And in this way, if you keep on arguing with the person who's selling the ticket, you may never get onto the plane. So you have to have some basic faith that this aeroplane is going to get me to the desired destination. Similarly, we have to have faith that by serving the Lord in this way, we will ultimately get to our desired destination, which is to become pure devotees of the Lord. And then after death, we will go back to the kingdom of God. That faith is necessary. And simply by serving the Lord, automatically that faith will come. We can't wait for that faith to come and then we shall serve. No, it's simultaneous. The more you serve, the more faith you develop. And the more faith you have, the more you want to serve. So regarding this faith and how the deity reciprocates with the devotee, exactly as a person, there are so many wonderful stories and leelas in the lives of great devotees. There is one particular deity in Orissa that is called Sakshi Gopal. Sakshi means witness. Gopal is another name for Krishna. So the story goes like this. That once upon a time, there were two brahmanas who were living in a town called Vidyanagar in South India. And they decided to go on a long pilgrimage. So they went to the various holy places, Kashi, Gaya, and so on. Ultimately, they came to Mathura. And then they reached Vrindavan. And they were going around and around, Govardhan. They went to the various forests where Lord Krishna performed so many of his leelas and pastimes. And then they came to the temple of Gopal, the murti of Gopal, which is also the name of Krishna. So when they came there, they were very much overwhelmed by the beauty of Gopal. And the Brahmanas were two of them. One of them was very old and the other one was very young. And all through the yatra, the pilgrimage, the younger Brahman, he had served the older Brahman with great faith, with great love, just like a disciple serves the guru. He served him with great devotion. And therefore the older brahmana was very much indebted, sort of gratitude. He said, you have served me so nicely that even my son actually doesn't serve me like this. So I'm greatly indebted to you. So I want to give you something. So therefore, I'm telling you, I want to offer you the hand of my daughter in marriage. So the younger Brahmin said, my dear sir, please do not promise me this, because I have served you not for anything in return. I have served you for the sake of my duty and my to Lord Krishna, because you are a devotee of the Lord. Therefore, I have served you. And in any case, you are from an aristocratic rich family. Your family is very learned and very well renowned. And on the other hand, I am such a poor man. I am not even well educated. My family is not aristocratic. So definitely, your family members and your relatives will not agree to this proposition. So there is no point. Please remember, he told him, the story of King Bhishmaka and Rukmini. Rukmini wanted to marry Krishna. And this is 5,000 years ago. And Bhishmaka, the father, King Bhishmaka, her father, also was very agreeable to this proposal. But his eldest son, Rukmi, he was very envious of Krishna. And he was friends with Shishupal, who was also very envious of Krishna. And Rukmi wanted Rukmini to be married to Shishupal. So Prince Rukmi, he fought with his father and said, no, Rukmini, my sister, cannot be married to Krishna. She should be married to Shishupal. And in this way, King Bhishmaka had to relent. So the young Brahmana was telling the older Brahmana, of course, later on as it happened, Lord Krishna kidnapped Rukmini and took her away and married her. That's another story. But, so this old younger Brahmana was telling him, look, in the same way, your family members are not going to accept. You are very confident now that you are going to stand firm by your decision, but you will get tremendous opposition when you go home. So he said, no, this is my daughter. And my family members and relatives must listen to what I say. They cannot forbid me from doing this. So please have faith. You must accept because you have done so much for me. So I will give you the hand of my daughter in marriage. So please accept it. So after a lot of persuasion, the younger Brahmana said, all right, since you are insisting so much, I will accept. But please make the vow in front of the deity of Gopal. So they went once again in front of the deity of Gopal. And the older Brahmin said, yes, I make the vow in front of you, Gopalji, that I will give the hand of my daughter to this young Brahmana here because he has served me so nicely. And the young Brahmin also told Gopal that, see, now you are my witness, you are my sakshi, that in case he changes his mind when we go back, so you are my witness, and in case of any problem, I will come back to you. You must come as a witness. So in this way, they went back. And they reached home very happy after a long yatra. Now when the Brahmana, older Brahmana reached home, time was passing by, and then he began to realize that actually his family members would naturally oppose this alliance. So one day he said, what had to be, according to principles of dharma, I must keep my word of honor, because I have promised this younger man, this young Brahmin, the hand of my daughter in front of the deity of Gopal. I am a Brahmana, a man of principles, so I must keep my word. So he called all his family members and relatives, and announced his decision that I want to hand over my daughter to this young man. So everyone was aghast. He said, that man, he's from such a low family, he's not even educated and learned. This is not possible. We cannot accept it. And when the older Brahmana began to insist, all the other family members objected. His wife and sons, they said, if you insist and do this, then we will all commit suicide. So then he became very much aggrieved. And he said, now what to do? So he was a great devotee of the Lord, but at the same time he had great attachment for his family members and he did not want them to die. So he was thinking of a way out and praying to Lord Gopal, please help me. In the meanwhile, the younger Brahmana, as time was passing by, he came and he told the older Brahmana that you have given me a vow, but so much time has passed and it does not seem that you are acting upon your vow. So please remember, according to your religious principles, you must not violate them. Otherwise, you will suffer, incur sin. So please, you must give me the hand of your daughter in marriage. So the older Brahmana, as per the instructions of his son, he said, well, actually, I don't remember that I made you this promise. The older son, he had actually told him that, okay, you need not lie because since you are a religious man, so don't lie to him, but just tell him that you don't remember. So in this way, the older man told him, and he was very shocked, the younger man. So immediately he went out and called all the elderly people in the village and he announced, say, this is what this older man had told me. He told me that he would give me the hand of his daughter in marriage, and he promised in front of the deity of Gopal. And yet now, because of the pressure of his family members, he's actually refusing. He says he doesn't remember. But I know, actually, because his family members are greedy and they don't want to fulfill their promise, so they are actually putting pressure on him. So the family of the older Brahmin were all summoned in the panchayat, and they were called. And so the older man spoke up. Actually, this younger Brahmin, he's a rogue, he's a scoundrel. He took my father, my old father, who's such a innocent man. He took the money from him. He gave him some intoxicant to drink and put him to sleep. And then he robbed all his money. He stole his wealth. And also now he stayed lying that he has promised his daughter in marriage. So simply because he's greedy for all these things, he's lying. So then the elderly people became confused. It's possible that maybe because out of greed, this young man who's actually a religious person, but maybe he got a little carried away because of the temptation of money and wealth and being married into a rich family. So maybe that is why he has done this. So again, the young man became very much distressed. He said, no, I will prove it to you. Lord Gopal is my sakshi, he is my witness. He will come here and he shall give witness. So immediately the older Brahmin agreed, yes, yes. If Gopal comes here and bears witness, I will gladly give my daughter to you. And the older son of the Brahmin, older Brahmin, he also agreed, yes, yes, yes. If Gopal comes here personally, I will give my sister in marriage to you. So actually, by Lord Krishna's arrangement, both the older Brahmin and the son agreed. Actually, the older Brahmin wanted to give his daughter to him and keep his promise. But simply because of his family pressure, he couldn't. But he knew that Gopal would come and give witness. So he was very happy. He said, yes, I will give you. I will give you my daughter. But the son, he agreed to the proposal for a different reason. Because he was an atheist. So he thought, how can this statue come all the way from Vrindavan to here? It's impossible. It's an impossible situation. So what is the harm in me agreeing to this request? It is never going to materialize anyway. So Lord, what's the harm? Let me say yes. So he said yes. So both of them said yes, so everyone agreed. So then the younger Brahmana proceeded to Vrindavan. He finally reached Vrindavan and went to the temple of Lord Gopal. And he said, Gopalji, now I've come in front of you. So he explained the whole situation. Just see, he was relating to Krishna exactly as a person. So he told him, see, you remember, we came here that day and this Brahmana was there and you bore witness. Then when I went back, this happened, and he related the whole story. So he said, now you must bear witness. So Gopal spoke to him, the deity spoke to him, and he said, yes, I will appear in your hometown and then I will bear witness. So the younger Brahmin was not satisfied. He said, no, no, even if you appear in your four-handed Vishnu form, they will not agree. They will not think it is you who have come, it is Gopal. You must come exactly as you are yourself, as I see you in front of me. In your deity form as Gopal, you must come to Vidyanagar. So Lord Krishna says, come on now. This is unheard of. Now, how can you expect me? I am just a deity. How can a deity, how can a murti come like this? How can a murti walk behind you for hundreds of miles to South India? So the young Brahmana was very smart. He was a good devotee of the Lord. So he said, my dear Lord, who has heard of a deity speaking? That is also unheard of. So if you can walk, if you can talk, then you can walk. So therefore you should come with me. So Gopal was defeated completely. He didn't have any answer. So he was speechless. So he said, okay, I will come. He said, I will come on one condition. That you should feed me 1 kilo of rice every day. And I will wear ankle belts. And you will know that I am following behind you. But you should never look behind. If you look behind, then I will stop where I am. And I will not proceed further. So he said, all right. So in this way they went day after day after day. It took many, many, many days. And Gopal was simply following that young Brahmana. And when they reached the outskirts of the village, then the young Brahmana thought, okay, now the purpose is fulfilled. And now I will bring all the villagers here. So he looked back, and then Gopal rested there. And he told him, okay, now you can go inside your village and call back all the people. I will remain here. So then he went in and called all the assembled villagers. He assembled all of them together, and the older Brahmin family also came. And then in front of everyone, Gopal actually spoke and he bore witness. And he said, yes, actually the older Brahman did promise in front of me and I am the witness. And everyone was struck with wonder and they were all astonished. And then with all due ceremony, that marriage was solemnized. And then historically, as it happens, the deity was shifted to Orissa. And it is still present on the outskirts of Jagannath Puri, Sakshi Gopal. It is still present today. If you go today to Orissa, you will see that very same deity. So in this way, we can see that the deity reciprocates according to your level of devotion. This young Brahmana was actually understanding this is directly Lord Krishna. Pratima nahi tumi sakshat Vrajendra Nandana. That's what the young Brahmana told the deity. When Lord Krishna told him, how can I walk? I'm just a deity. He said, you're not just a statue. You're directly the son of Nanda Maharaj. You're directly Lord Krishna yourself. So you can do anything. You can also walk. So this is the meaning of love and faith. The deity reciprocates according to our devotion. If you see the deity as a living person, as directly the Lord himself, he will also reveal to you accordingly. So we see that the more we come in front of the deity, offer our obeisances, offer him a leaf, offer him a flower, offer him our prayers. So more and more we begin to see directly that Lord Krishna is present there. We begin to understand that he is not just a statue. So in this way there are many, many, many wonderful stories. Maybe when time permits, according to the relevance of the shloka, I will try to narrate to you many more stories of this kind. They are very wonderful stories which illustrate all the philosophical principles that we are studying in Bhagavad Gita. So in this way we will see that Lord Krishna, out of his mercy, has made himself available to accept our service so that we can get purified and ultimately attain the goal of our life. So we will stop here, and if there are any questions, I will be happy to answer.
Prabhuji, you said the various deities which we have, how do they get the name? Like here we have Gopalnath ji and then Radha Gopinath. How do these deities get the name? Can you please explain that?
The pure devotees of the Lord, they name the deity according to their particular understanding. Sometimes the deities are named according to the circumstances in which they were discovered, or according to the circumstances, location, etc. For example, the deity of, there is another story of one deity who stole some kheer for his devotee. So he was called Kheera Gopinath. Kheera Chor Gopinath. The one who stole kheer for his devotee. Similarly, Dwarkadhish. Dwarkadhish means he is the lord of Dwarka. So in Dwarka he is named like that. So Gopinath means the lord of the gopis. So the pure devotee who invokes the presence of the Lord within the deity, as the deity, he gives the deity a name, and he names the deities according to that. So you have Radha Gopinath, you have Radha Rasbihari, or you have Radha Gokulananda, Radha Madhava, and so on, according to the particular mood. Any other questions? Yes? Previous class? Yeah, if any other questions are relevant to this class, we will answer them first, and then if there is time, we can go on to that question. Yes, there is one question.
Prabhuji, you said that chanting the holy name as well as deity worship are two avatars for the Kali Yuga also, which we must accept. Then why do we say that while chanting, we should just be hearing and not concentrating on the form of the deity?
Because chanting of the holy name is an independent process. And and that is the Yuga Dharma for this age. So it is the most important process. So when we are chanting the holy name, the process is to simply hear. Because you are engaging the sense of hearing in the holy name, in hearing the holy name. So we should try to push out all other thoughts. And we should try not to see anything else. Simply focus all our energy simply on hearing the holy name. So the holy name is the independent process, the supreme process for self-realization in this age. The process of deity worship revolves around the chanting of the holy name. So the process of deity worship is wider. There you are engaging all your senses and you have to chant so many mantras which include the holy names of the Lord. And there you are also physically engaged with a different, your hand is in working, your mind, your intelligence, everything, every part of your body is working there. So the holy name demands exclusive attention. And deity worship also demands exclusive attention, but still based upon the holy name.
Though Krishna,
yes.
I'm sorry,
yes, please.
Though the Lord is in the form of the deity, how come that the people who want to, you know, love God don't feel at once so much love for the deity? I mean, once in a way they get overwhelmed when they see the deity, but most of the time they just regard it as some kind of an idol or a statue. Though they know in their heart of hearts that it is, you know, the Lord Himself who is in the deity.
Therefore, Lord Krishna has given us a formula. Service. Serve the deity and you will develop that love. You see, that is why Lord Krishna has come as the deity form, because we don't have that love. So by serving Him, automatically that love develops. The more you are acquainted with the person, automatically you will develop that love. If you don't know somebody, out of sight, out of mind, isn't it? There's no question of love. So all the time when you see the deity, you serve the deity, in this way your love develops more and more. Because by serving the deity, the heart gets purified. In this way our devotion increases. And the more our devotion increases, the more we want to serve, and the purer our service becomes. Well, one more question this time, I think.
Prabhuji, why all the deities are different outlook when the Lord is supreme? Like we have Srinath ji and we have Radha Gopinath. Since they are all the Krishna avatar only, but the outlook is different.
Yes, although Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is originally one, He has that same form as Gopinath ji, but still He manifests Himself in so many different forms for the pleasure of the devotees and for His own pleasure. So He comes sometimes as Ramachandra, He comes sometimes as Narsingadev, He comes sometimes in the boar form, comes sometimes in the Matsya avatar, He comes in so many different spiritual forms because He has infinite variety, infinite variegatedness. So that is why you will find, according to the particular Leela, Lord Krishna comes in a particular way. So Srinath ji is the form of the Lord who is actually bearing Govardhan Hill on the little finger of His left hand. And that is the mood in which He is worshipped as a boy in the Vallabh Sampradaya.
But as you look at the deity of Srinath ji, it doesn't seem like He is a boy. So He is a very mature deity, it looks like, a very matured face it looks like.
And that is just the way the deity is. But actually, that is the construction of the deity. But you should know that he's the boy Gopal. He's called Gopal. And he is waiting, that's why in all our devotional service to Gopal Nath ji, we treat him a little separately compared to the others. We have to give him butter, and we have to give him nice sweets separately, and dry fruits sometimes. So we have to treat him like he's a small boy and giving him in that mood. Whereas Gopinath is served in a different mood. So Lord Krishna takes His different forms where the mood is different. So now we will see one aspect of that mood when you take that darshan. Hare Krishna. So we will...
So like that, if you see the beautiful pictures, automatically, the more you beautify the deities, the more you lose the taste for decorating yourself. Start to the deities, the more you lose the desire to eat nice foodstuffs for yourself. The more you serve the deities, the more you lose the desire to serve yourself. So like that, there are so many wonderful pictures of deities all over the world in so many different temples. And we are indebted to Srila Prabhupada for having actually established this wonderful process all over the world. Now every country in the world will have so much a wonderful devoted and opulent worship going on. Earlier it was found only in a few temples, in temples only in India. But now you will find this worship everywhere. So there are even some wonderful pictures downstairs in the stall. You can take a look at them. And every Sunday also, if you want pictures of Radha Gopinath to worship on your altar in your homes, you can also take them and serve them in your own homes. Make a small altar and serve the deities. Every morning offer incense, offer flowers,
offer some food every day, bhoga, and then accept that as prasad. Every day chant in front of the deity. The picture is also non-different from the deity. So therefore, serve that deity in this way. And you will see how your heart becomes purified. And how you will immediately get attached to the deity. And you look forward to waking up in the morning and serving the deity. And eventually you can progress to have buying actual deities, brass deities. And then you can serve them. In this way, it is very, very purifying to be able to serve the deities. It's a very, very important aspect of devotional service. So every serious aspiring devotee must do some amount of deity worship in their own home. So one last question somebody wanted to ask? Anything? Yes, one last question and then we can wind up.
Verse Deinosmin Yatade, you had said that there was this discussion going on as to who is suffering. Is it the soul or is it the body? Or is it the mind? You know, there were many people saying soul, some people said body, some people said mind. And then you said the soul misidentifying itself with the body. I mean, I just want some clarification. So finally, who is suffering? I mean, still that point was not clear that day.
Actually, nobody is suffering.
But then why do people say that? You said that it's an illusion or it's in mind.
Yes, because after all, the soul is Satchit Ananda. The soul is always Ananda. Always. Eternally, that is the position of the soul. So the soul can never experience distress. The body is dead. It has no life. Therefore, a dead thing cannot experience pain or pleasure.
So this,
the mind is a part of the body. It's a subtle body. So it's also dead. It's only because of the presence of the soul that the mind can experience and touch and feel and do so many things. So who is experiencing? Who is actually feeling that pain? Actually, no one. But the soul thinks that actually the impact that has come on this body or the sensation that is there on the skin is actually me, is being felt by me, because the soul wrongly thinks I am the body. Therefore, it gets into the problem of identifying with all the inputs or all the stimuli that come onto the body in a gross way or in a subtle way.
So it means that happiness or distress is but an illusion?
Yes, happiness and distress of this body is an illusion. It doesn't exist. As I was explaining at that time, it's like a dream. It comes and goes. Why is the dream considered to be illusory? Because it ends. Very soon it ends. It's not permanent. It ends. So also your happiness and distress in relation to this body will end very soon. Now there is happiness. Next moment distress. Again happiness. Again distress. Like the winter and summer seasons, they come and go. But the happiness of the soul is eternal. But we have forgotten that. That's the only difference.
So when we say that my body is suffering or my body is feeling weak or something like that, it's actually the soul that is misidentifying with the body and feeling this.
Yes. But that doesn't mean that we should not take care if we have some disease or if we have something. We have to be practical to the level of our realization. And we have to take practical care of the body, just like the car driver understands I'm not the car, but still when the car needs repair, he gets the car repaired. He doesn't say, I'm not the car, therefore, I will not repair it. He repairs the car because the car has utility value. Similarly, this body has utility value for the soul. So he uses it in the service of Krishna. So when it needs to be repaired, he repairs it. He goes to a doctor. So we will stop here.